Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Prepare for Change radio show. Our website is http://prepareforchange.net. The purpose of our show is basically to prepare our listeners and others for the event and for the new life we will experience on our abundant earth following the event. We invite speaker guests onto the show to discuss some aspect that will directly or indirectly be helpful information to know in preparation for and at the time of the event. Our group was formed and we created a website at the urging of COBRA during the New Society Conference held in Irvine, California in May 2013. We broke into six groups according to where we felt drawn. These groups are leadership, media, financial, healing, renaissance, and technology. We are all volunteers that give freely of our time, energy, and passion. There are event support groups starting up all over the world. PrepareForChange.net serves as a hub where people can go to create a local group or to find a group already in your area. If there are no groups in your area, this is a good way to find other like-minded people that will be supportive of the goals of this group. On our website, go to the menu tab, Event Support. In the drop-down menu, see Join PFC or register as a local ESG Event Support Group contact. This will take you to the sign-up page. Your hosts for this show are Raisa of the Renaissance Group and Lynn of the Healing Group. Raisa and I will trade off asking questions of today's guest, who will speak on the subject of meditation in the yogic tradition. As we have presented meditation from the Western perspective with our previous guest, Gordon Asher Davidson, today we will get the Eastern perspective. We are delighted to have you with us and hope that you will enjoy today's presentation. Today's guest speaker is Danish Kashikar, lovingly known as Kashiji or Kashi. He is a senior faculty member who has been with the Art of Living Foundation since 1995. Driven by his passion to serve and inspired by Sri Sri Ravi Shankar, Kashi has traveled the world teaching Art of Living courses to an estimated 500,000 people, specializing in Sri Sri Yoga and Vedic Wisdom programs. Kashiji is a certified Yoga Alliance teacher, holding the highest level of accreditation. He has also served as the coordinator for an Art of Living Heritage School and is currently a member of the Board of Trustees of the Vedic Dharma Sanchthan, spearheading the delivery of the Art of Living's Vedic Wisdom programs. Kashiji has a graduate degree in chemical engineering from IIT Mumbai and has many diverse interests, including sports, music, theater, and books.
Kashiji, would you please share with us about your personal journey? How did you transition from a science background into a spiritual path? What or who inspired or motivated you to become a yoga and Vedic wisdom teacher?
Namaste, Raisa. I was in life studying, I did theater, I did music. I was looking for something in my life. And as I went through life, I was searching for something. And I didn't know what it was I was searching for. I tried to find it in education, I tried to find it in theater, in sports, yet there was something that was still missing. And one day, I met Sri Sri Ravi Shankar. I got to know about him and then I learned how to breathe and how to meditate. That transformed my life. Suddenly, I saw that my relationships were becoming better because I was meditating, my mind was calmer, peaceful. I didn't react so unconsciously. Suddenly my soccer improved because my reflexes improved, my mind was more alert. And so I realized that there's one thing that can transform the rest of my life, and that made a liked it so much, I started studying more about it. I started going, taking more advanced courses. And then I thought, if I can benefit so much, I'm sure there are other people in the world who can also benefit so much. So I started teaching these programs. For me, the last 20 years have been a method of sharing all the knowledge that I got. And whatever knowledge I got, I started sharing it with people. And I believe that's how life has brought me here to this day and to this place. For me, this is really the change that I saw in myself and I'd like to bring in society.
Thank you. As mentioned in your bio, that you have been teaching at the Art of Living Foundation for 20 years. The core teaching is the breathing techniques. One of them is called Sudarshan Kriya. Would you share with us the importance of the breath and the science behind this breathing technique and its benefits if one practices it daily? And also, what is the importance of the deep breathing?
For me, breath is something that's very important to anyone. The moment we are born, we start breathing. And till our last breath, that's the popular idiom, it shows that all throughout life, if there's one thing that we carry along with us, it is the breath. Not only that, the state of our mind is reflected in the rhythms of the breath. When we are happy, we are breathing in a certain pattern. When we are not so happy, we are breathing in a different pattern. If you look at people who are unhappy or upset, usually the exhalation is long. And those who are happy or excited, it's like the in-breath is more accentuated. So there is a definite connection between the rhythms, the thoughts, the patterns in the mind, and the breath, the patterns of the breath. It is this linkage that we look at in the Sudarshan Kriya. By varying the rhythms of the breath, by changing the rhythms of the breath, we can actually bring deep relaxation to the mind. And that's what the Sudarshan Kriya is. The Sudarshan Kriya literally means in Sanskrit, Su means proper, Darshan means vision, and Kriya means action. Sudarshan Kriya is literally an action that can bring about a proper vision. And when can we really have a proper vision? When we're really calm and peaceful? Because whenever we are agitated, later on we regret, oh, I made a wrong decision. I should have done something else. But when we're calm and peaceful and collected, there's more awareness, there's more peace, there's more focus. And therefore, using these rhythms of the breath, bringing a calmness, a peace to the mind, letting go of all the negative emotions. It's like an emotional catharsis, all that negativity comes out, and then you're left peaceful and more focused and more calm. And I believe this is what really makes this Sudarshan Kriya such an effective tool in the modern day. Maybe 100 years back, man did not have so much information coming to them. Today, because of the internet, the mobile phones, we're so connected and there's so much that's bombarding this mind of ours. And that's why I feel some specialized technique, some way to effectively calm the mind, to make it more peaceful, is all the more necessary in today's world. That's what the Sudarshan Kriya offers. It was so effective for me as a student studying engineering that I actually started getting much better grades. I started studying less and knowing more, and that really for me was an amazing impact. That's what the Sudarshan Kriya does to us.
Very interesting and powerful, it seems. Thank you. How does the breath play into meditation?
Now, meditation, the word meditation in Sanskrit, it is called dhyana, which comes from two Sanskrit roots. Dhi, which means buddhi, which means the intellect, and na, which means no, or negative. Now, it's an intellect that's active all the time. When you're listening to this, part of the mind goes, yes, 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 this is true. And sometimes when I say something which you don't agree with, The mind says, no, this is not right. This activity in the mind just continuous. It says, yes, no, yes, no. If you take any instrument, any equipment, and you keep running it all the time, it's going to get worn out pretty quickly. And that's what happens with our intellect, with the mind. The more we get engaged with the world, the less we rest, the less we relax. This instrument of the mind gets worn out. And that's what we call stress in today's life. The more decisions we have to make, the more choices we have to make, the more engaged with life that we are, the more active we are, the more rest we require, the more quality rest we require. And that's why using these rhythms of the breath, we are able to practice dhyana, or allowing this intellect to relax for a little while. And that really is meditation. Meditation happens naturally for all of us. We go watch a sunset on the ocean and the mind calms down. Maybe we are playing with our kids or with our pets and the mind calms down. There are so many ways in which the mind really calms down. Yet, the breath is one of the most effective ways of making this happen. That's why there's a linkage between the breath and the mind which you can really exploit. It's like you can have a battery, a cell that can charge your phone or that can charge your camera for 1 hour. There can be a better cell that can charge it for 3 hours. So obviously, you would like to have something that can do it much better, more efficiently. And that's why, though there are so many ways to meditate, using the breath is one of the most effective ways, the most short time and long result. That's what I would say for the linkage between breath and meditation.
Thank you. Very interesting. In the West, we tend to believe that yoga is a physical exercise. What is the true meaning of yoga and its practice?
Of course, yoga encompasses exercise also. The asanas, the practices are definitely a part of yoga. Yet yoga means much more. The word yoga itself comes from the Sanskrit root yuj, which means to unite or bring together. Bringing together loose ends of our existence. A lot of times we are sitting here and we are thinking of something else. The body is here but the mind is somewhere else. The breath is moving on, we are not even aware of it. So getting all these loose ends of our existence together, that is really what is yoga. And that happens naturally when we are doing some asana practices. The asanas, we are moving our body, there is a tension on the body, we are moving our breath in a particular way, and there is mindfulness, there is awareness. And really, that is what makes the yoga happen. So yoga can happen in many ways. There is bhakti yoga, there is raj yoga, there is dhyana yoga, there is karma yoga. So many different ways of yoga are enunciated in the text. Scriptures regarding you, and all of this, one small part is the asana practice. But really speaking, if we want to have the whole of something, it's good to study something in its entirety. It's like saying, I have a very nice dish, and I'm going to have only one scoop of it and leave the rest off and throw it in the garbage. But really speaking, yoga has so much to offer. So whether it's meditation, whether it's knowledge, whether it's learning how the mind works and how to live the life more effectively, all of this is part of yoga. That's why I feel yoga is such a vast subject. Only a little bit is bad. It's, I would say it's like the iceberg. Only 10% shows up on top, but 90% is down below water. That's what's most powerful.
Kashi, could you define meditation for us?
Meditation, I would say, is deconcentration. A lot of times people think meditation means putting the focus on something or thinking about something. But really for me, meditation is deconcentration, allowing the mind to relax. It's like when I want to shoot an arrow, I need to pull the string back. And then the arrow moves forward. In the the same way, when I want my mind to focus more, to be more effective, I need to first learn how to relax. And meditation is the deepest relaxation possible. In sleep, there is relaxation, but there is no awareness. But in meditation, there is rest and awareness together. That's what makes it more effective. For example, if I want to dial a number on my cell phone, if I look at my cell phone and dial the number, it's easier to get it right. But if I look somewhere else and try to dial a number, chances are, in fact, most of the time, I might end up dialing the wrong number. So when my attention is on what I'm doing, when my actions are filled with awareness, it is much more effective. Sleep is rest without awareness, and meditation is rest with awareness. So obviously, meditation is much more effective in giving us a deeper rest. Of course, sleeping will definitely give us some rest, but meditation gives us a deeper quality of rest. And that's why I would say meditation, if it can be defined, is restful awareness or aware restfulness.
I like that. Restful awareness. Can you talk about higher consciousness and how it relates to meditation?
Consciousness exists. That is something that we all can feel intuitively. The very fact that we are alive, that we are working, that we are ticking, means there is some life inside. And there is something that is making this whole universe exist. The atoms and molecules by themselves are there, but there is something that impels them. There is something that creates molecules, attracts molecules to come together and form the wall, the carpet, the people. This whole organization of matter happens because of consciousness. And as we meditate, we start accessing all these higher levels of consciousness. It is as if when the window pane is covered with dust, I'm not able to see outside. But the moment I take a piece of cloth and clean the window pane becomes clear, then I'm able to see beyond. Meditation is this process of cleaning the window pane of the mind. And when the windows are clean, I'm able to see beyond. That is why in the yoga tradition, in the yoga sutras, it is said, Tada drishtu swarupe avasthana, which means, When you do the practice of yoga, then you will see beyond drishta swarupa. Drishta means the seer, swarupa means the form. And that's why when we practice yoga, then we are able to see beyond all these coverings and look into the self, look into who we are, look into the consciousness that we have, this experience of consciousness. Comes with the practice of yoga. There is one, an intellectual understanding, oh, there is consciousness, but the other is an experiential experience of having, knowing that I am the consciousness. And that is the benefit of doing yoga, of meditating.
Does meditation help to raise one's awareness of higher consciousness?
Yeah. I would say that consciousness is. And the more we become aware of it, the more we realize that we are the consciousness. It's like, as small children, we are not yet able to speak the language. But as we grow up, we can express ourselves better. And there are some people who can express themselves even better. And they become poets or literators, authors, because they can tell that same story in a more, in a better way, in a more enticing way, in a more attractive way. So, just like as a child, we are not able to express ourselves, as we grow up, we express ourselves, and for some people, we express them better. So, in the same way, that same consciousness, some of us are able to perceive it, and as we keep meditating, able to perceive it better, and some of us can really perceive it so well that we can express it also better. So in that sense, as we keep meditating, our powers of perception, our ability to perceive this consciousness, so more than higher consciousness, I would say there is a depth of consciousness that's there to explore. And that really, we can give any metaphor that we would like to call it higher or deeper, but it's that one consciousness which you have put blinkers on, just like the horse with blinkers, doesn't move till a little bit is open and then the horse starts to run. In the same way, all of us are, it seems like we have blinkers on, we are not able to perceive the consciousness. It's there all around us, scintillating. And yet, when we close our eyes, we open the inner eye and perceive that consciousness. That really is what meditation leads us to, opens us up to our own nature. And that, I would say, is whether you call it higher consciousness or depths of consciousness, can be any adjective that you like to. It just opens up to that consciousness.
Are there other benefits of daily meditation practice?
Of course. It's like when we purify the source, then all that stems from that source becomes more effective. It's like if I make sure that the electric current that comes into my house, it's proper, then all the appliances, all the gadgets that run off that electricity start performing more effectively. Supposing the electricity that comes into my house is not proper, it is, the voltage fluctuates, something happens, there's a danger that some of my appliances would probably go off. But if I can put something and make it a good clean source of power, then that's going to have it. Just like when we look at our diet, when we eat appropriately what is appropriate for our system, then this body functions properly. When we eat something that's not appropriate or inappropriate, it does not function properly. And that creates illness. In the same way, the way we take care of our body, in the same way we take care of our mind. And when we access that higher consciousness, when we meditate, then it shows up in all the aspects of our life, whether it's physical, mental, emotional, what aspects of our life benefit by meditation.
Does meditation translate into better health?
Sure, of course. When meditation happens, the stress level of our system goes down. We're able to be more calm, more peaceful. And in a de-stress situation, the body produces what I would say are happy hormones or peaceful hormones. So the whole system, metabolism of the body changes as we start meditating, becomes more peaceful. And there's a lot of healing power. Our body has an innate healing power. It tends to heal itself. When we are more peaceful, we are supporting that system. That's why as we meditate more and more, health improves. Peace, it's amazing. For the last 20 years, I don't know when I have been ever so unwell that I had to take any medicine. So I've not really taken any medicine for the last 20 years. It's so amazing when I look back and I say, hey, this is something so amazing.
Is there any correlation between a long, healthful life and greater longevity?
I wouldn't know this connection between how long people live. There are healthy people who die early and there are unhealthy people who live a long life. So some way, I would say it's your karma or it's your destiny. And I have no idea to say, I don't know how we can actually measure how long our life is going to be based on some other factors. But yes, I can definitely say this, that the quality of life can definitely be improved by meditation. I mean, someone could be going and some mishap could happen and we could die. But the amount of time that we live, we can either live happily or it can be full of misery. Meditation definitely creates that happiness, that joy in life, the joy of the consciousness, which makes the quality of life much better. It doesn't matter how long I'm living, but that quality of life definitely increases. And yes, because there is better health, because the mind is more peaceful, because the breath is more relaxed, definitely people have experienced longevity and more healthy, longer life. There's no point just having a long life and lying down in bed half the time. But good health is really, in Sanskrit, the word for this, for health, is swasthya, which means one who is established in the self. So I would say meditation gives us this swasthya, being able to be established in the self, that creates for better health and longevity, not just at the bodily level, but at the mental level too.
Kashi, are you aware of any studies that have maybe been done on meditation and the benefits to people?
Well, there are many, many studies that I've done, that have been done on meditation, some of them on the technique that I teach, the Sudarshan Kriya. In India, there is an institute called the National Institute for Mental Health and Neurosciences. It studies the impact of various techniques, various aspects on the neural system, the neurological system, the nervous system. And they have come up with some amazing studies how just by meditation at a genetic level also there are changes. They're using these meditation techniques, the Sudarshan Kriya, to actually treat depression. There are people who are depressed, and instead of giving them any medication, they're able to bring about physiological change in the state of their body just by meditation and Sudarshan Kriya. So yeah, there are a lot of studies which show that these techniques have a very positive impact, not just at the mental level, but at the physical level.
Could you please talk about the soul?
The soul is variously called Atma, the soul, the Antaratma, Jiva. A lot of names are definitely given as describing the soul or the Atma. And I would say the word Atma, there was one saint who talked very beautifully. He said, there are two words that form Atma, and when you reverse them, it becomes Mata. Mata in Sanskrit means mother. The Atma really is the soul or the mother of this whole creation that is. For me, this sense of identity, of this is what I am, that's the Jiva or the individual soul. But much more than this sense of I am, I feel I'm a part of all of this, which is called the Paramatma, or the soul of the universe. So yeah, there are various ways of looking at this. But if you look at it scientifically, I see that there is some part of me, some collection of atoms which considers itself me. But if I look more deeply, then the whole of this universe is filled with the same proton, electron, neutron. And actually, this whole universe is made up of just the same building blocks. If you look very deeply, you see that whether it's me or whether it's you or whether it's the air between us, it's all made up of the same substance. Look at it that way. It's so amazing to see that this whole universe is made up of just one substance. And that really is what the ancient rishis termed as the Atma. The soul, or the one thing that pervades all.
Where does the soul go after death?
In various traditions, various theories are postulated about what happens to the soul. What in the Vedic tradition, they say that the soul is something that binds, is attached to the body with the prana. And once the prana leaves, once the breath gets over, then this connection between the Atma and the body, physical body, is dealing. So the body dies down, goes back to the elements, whereas the soul moves on. And then based on the impressions that it collects, it goes on and takes another one. Of course, different traditions talk about it differently. This is what the Vedic tradition has to say about the migration of the soul or how it goes on. It is variously described, and in one of the descriptions it says the body is like the clothes that we wear and the soul is like who we are. Every day we change our clothes, but we remain the same. In the same way, the soul is something that keeps on taking a body and changing the bodies as it goes through the cycle of life and death. This analogy is usually given to describe the journey of the soul through the various bodies.
Is there a difference between the soul and the spirit?
Depending on how we define each of these words, I guess each of us can come up with a different set of differentiation. The whole thing is, if I define the soul and the spirit as the same thing, then it would be the same for me. But if I give different attributes to this, for me, when I say the word spirit, it really connotes that universal spirit that permeates everything, that impels this whole universe to me. So in that sense, yes, soul would mean an individual soul that is limited, and spirit would be something that's universal. It's similar to saying that as humanity, we are just one, but as an individual, I am Kashi. So both exist in me simultaneously. The fact that I'm Kashi is also true, and the fact that I'm a human being is also true. So at the same time, I would be both the soul and the spirit.
Thank you.
The fact that there is suffering, in fact, the Buddha said, misery is one of the truths of life. Suffering comes out of unawareness. The more unaware we are, the more we are not in touch with the reality, the more the suffering that comes. Let me give an example. There are so many people who are very wealthy and they are really suffering. And there are so many people who are very poor, don't have much to eat, but there's a smile on the face. So for me, misery does not come from external positions. There are so many people who are very healthy and yet are miserable. There are so many people who are very unwell, yet they can smile in the face of misery. So much more than the situation is how we handle it. And really speaking, it is the mind that gets miserable. Even though there are certain situations that create misery, mind me that misery happens inside and not outside. For example, if I cut my hand, it is the knife that has cut my hand, but the feeling of pain happens inside. So if you look at it very carefully, this whole world creates a situation for us, but it's up to us how we experience that situation. And as we move on the spiritual path, it becomes easier to disassociate this external world with the state that we are into. And that's why there are so many masters, there are so many gurus, there are so many spiritual people who have walked this planet, who have gone through tremendous problems. Yet they have been able to come out of it unscathed, untainted, unattached. And that situation has never ever been able to cut through and make them miserable.
Thank you, Kashi.
If you are just tuning in, you are listening to the Prepare for Change radio show. Today's guest is Kashi, discussing meditation from an Eastern perspective.
This is Lynn, also known as Angel Eyes. If you too have a passion for one of our new society groups and would like to join us in preparation for the event, please sign up at our site. I can speak for the healing group. We have many plans in progress. Currently, we have Angel Eyes healing wish list. This is something that anyone of any age can contribute. All we need is your name or the name that you want to be known by, your country, and up to 3 wishes that you want for yourself, your loved ones, or the whole world. Everyone has things they want to bring into manifestation. I want to thank all of those who have already participated. Remember that part of manifestation is devoting time each day to seeing your wishes already manifested. Go to the Healing Group tab and then click on Angel Eyes Wish List Instructions. Please see others' wishes and pray, meditate, that their wishes are manifest also. We are also looking to expand our information into other languages besides English. If you are bilingual or multilingual and would like to join this translation volunteer effort by sharing in another language, these services are great gifts for non-English speakers. Join our translation team is under the Home tab. Now back to Kashi.
Do you feel that we are at a point in our history where the majority of people on Earth are awakening rapidly?
In the last 20 years or so, I have seen the spiritual movement, as I would put it, grow tremendously. When I joined the Arcade Foundation, there were about 6 or 7 of us on the International Center at the Ashram in India. And today, I see about 1,000 people there doing so much to spread this love, to spread this humanity across. Today, the Art of Living itself is spread about 152 countries worldwide, and we are able to do so much to bring about this peace, to bring about this harmony, to bring about this sense of humanity back to the world. In the last 20 years itself, I have seen people from all walks of life. I have traveled across the globe and I have seen people accepting this wonderful technique, this cord, this connection to the spirit. I've been traveling extensively and I've seen it grow over the years. I've seen how people are more accepting. It's amazing to watch how the spirit is just rising up every corner of this world.
Do you have a vision for humanity and the future of life on Earth?
I would say, in the words of my guru, Sri Sri Ravi Shankar, that this world is one family. Vasudhaiva Kutumbakam. It's a one world family. We're all part of the same humanity. And I see the world, even though it seems to be moving in the opposite direction, but really, we're all moving towards a one world family. Today, technology has brought us together. This, for many of us who are watching this or hearing this broadcast, we are able to do it even though we are so far away. And that's what technology does. In fact, it brings people together. At the same time, it has the power to separate people. Yet I feel that innately, humanity wants to come together. And that really is the message that I'd like to spread. We are one world family. It's one world family. We are one humanity. And recognizing this commonality, that we have so much in common, and dropping these differences, superficial differences, in fact, which are just skin deep. We just go 1 centimeter below the skin. All of us are the same. We are made up of the same flesh, the same blood. That's what I would really like. We are one world family. Let's all realize this. Let's come together in this path.
Vasudeva Kutumbakam, one world family. Thank you. Very inspiring. What is the Vedic wisdom? Would you please explain this? I don't think many people in the West know what Vedic wisdom is.
The word Veda itself comes from the root Ved, which means to know. So Vedas really mean the knowledge. And knowledge is something that all of us have been acquiring throughout time, whichever part of the world we are in. So there is knowledge about the universe, there is knowledge about the self, there is knowledge about how this mind works, how the emotions move. There is spiritual knowledge, there is material knowledge. All of this combined together is called the Vedas. So really, Vedic wisdom is like saying the same thing in two ways. Veda means wisdom started even today. There are so many practices, so many techniques that were there to handle the mind. The ancient rishis in India, in fact, across the world, at one point in time, I would say, spoke about this universe, all these truths that this universe possesses, and express them as the Vedas. And though they were in Sanskrit, the universe today, as part of the Vedic wisdom programs, we promote or we expose people to this ancient wisdom that's valid even today. As a simple example, there is the impact of sound on the mind. Some sounds tend to excite the mind, some sounds tend to calm down the mind, like some music. We might not understand the words, yet the feeling gets transmitted simply by the rhythm, by the cadence, by the sound. So the ancient rishis put together these various sounds and call them mantra, or like a formula. And that's what was handed down across traditions, across the years. And it comes to us today as the Vedas. So using these sounds, using these chants, we're able to dive deep into the self and experience a certain peace, a certain calmness, sharpen the mind, focus the mind. All of these aspects come up with the different techniques that are described in the Vedas. The Vedic wisdom talks about these techniques and lets us experience some of these techniques and utilize them in our daily life to achieve our goals.
So it would help to uplift one's life, right?
Of course. There is so much to life which is not just material. So all of us live our life, we have to eat something, we have to sleep, we wake up, we do so many activities in our life. And most of these activities we associate with the mundane. But if we can link all these activities, something more divine, something more uplifting, it will uplift the whole of our life. So if something as simple as taking a bath, we could associate with something divine, it will make a difference in our life. And that's what the Vedic wisdom brings to us. It makes even the mundane activities linked to the divine, linked to something higher, linked to a higher purpose. That makes life blossom in its full sense.
Thank you. There is a mysterious occurrence that happens in our lives. It is called dreaming. Why do we dream? And are there different types of dreams?
Dreaming is one of the states of our existence. Like there is a waking state, there is a sleeping state, and in between there is a dream state. Our dreams could be of many types. There could be some dreams which are just reflections of the past. Maybe there's some experience that we went through and we relive it in our dreams. Some of the dreams could be premonitions from the future. Maybe an idea of what's going to happen. Some of the dreams could be just related to the place that we are. Maybe if I come to California and then I could maybe dream about some of the objects here or the situations here. Some of the dreams could be just about my own fears or my own fantasies, what I'd like to see or what I'm afraid of. But most of the time, dreams are a mixture of all these categories. And that, I would say, is the fifth type of dream, and that is probably the most common occurrence. So, there's one quote I'd like to quote here from Sri Sri. He said, "The wise look at life waking as a dream." And when we start taking the dreams as a reality, then we live in a completely different world. So it is wise to look at the dreams as it's wise to look at dreams and interpret something, but it's wiser to look at life itself as a dream, not get stuck.
I like that. Two very popular subjects in the West, dreams and karma. What is karma?
simply the impression in Vedic thought. Karma talks about how we do some action and what it leaves behind with us. For example, maybe we drink a cup of coffee and we like it. And we say, hey, this is nice. And then next day we say, okay, let me drink another cup of coffee, that was nice. And very soon we have coffee karma. That impression that's there makes us drink the coffee every day. And after some time, whether we like it or not, we want that coffee. That action has come out of this impression. The actions which come out of impression are the results of karma. So simply speaking, just the impression of any action that has got imprinted on our chitta, in the memory, that is karma.
Thank you. Kashi, just between us, what is your secret to happiness?
The secret to happiness is just being happy. You know, we had a competition to design slogans for those months, and there was a very apt slogan which said, busy being happy and happy being busy. So I'm very busy being happy, so I don't have time for anything else. And I'm very happy being busy.
Have you personally met enlightened people?
Of course. For me, the moment I met Sri Sri, it was a very enlightening experience. I felt here's a person that can really transmit that experience of the self. And it's so, for those of us who are around Los Angeles and you're watching this or listening to this, we're going to have a great opportunity to meet Sri Sri in person on May 9th at our Los Angeles Center. So, I tell you, it's the most amazing experience to just have an experience of this person. It changed my life, it changed yours too.
Thank you, I'm looking forward to this event. How about yourself, Kashi? Are you doing any courses while you're here in the United States?
I've been traveling across the United States and talking about all that I learned, the Vedic wisdom, the yoga, and so I guess I'll be coming back to the Los Angeles Center when I come back with Sri Sri on May 9th. Then I'm going to be traveling across the United States teaching these techniques. Those who want to know more, you can definitely look up our website and get to know more about the whole schedule of programs. I love California. This is the first place I came into the US. It's made a big impact on me. I would love to come back here and spend more time with you.
Thank you. We would love you to come back.
Thank you.
How can one bring harmony and balance to body, mind, and spirit?
In fact, the word harmony itself means balance. And when the body, mind, and spirit are balanced, that's when we can experience harmony. And the techniques to do that is called yoga. So yoga in the sense, not just moving the body, but doing something for the mind, doing something for the spirit. When the body is calm and peaceful, then the mind takes over. And when the mind is calm and peaceful, then we can experience the spirit. So, step by step, doing the asanas, doing the pranayama, doing the meditation. And that's why I feel Sudarshan Kriya, or the Art of Living program, is such an effective tool to bring about this harmony. And I've been teaching this across continents, whether it's Mongolia, Russia, Japan, Taiwan, or Africa. People from all walks of life, from every culture, have been able to experience this harmony. I would like to invite you all to also experience this harmony for yourself.
Is diet and exercise also important in your practice?
Diet can definitely help, and exercise or postures makes a big difference. For me, I usually like to think of yoga as an ice cream shop. There are so many different flavors of ice cream, and you can choose which ice cream you want. You can take a taste, you can take flavors, and then choose what you like. So there's exercise, there's meditation, there's pranayama, there's service. There's a huge range of all activities that you can choose from. So you can definitely choose from whatever you like.
Would you suggest to people that they say they don't have time to meditate? What would you say to these people?
You know, when I was in college, it was very hectic. And I really needed 28 hours a day to really make it through. When I started meditating, I suddenly realized that I was getting better quality of rest. And initially, I needed 8 hours of sleep to actually make it through any day. But then I slowly started noticing that with half an hour of meditation, I could make do with 6 hours of rest. So essentially, by meditating, I was gaining 1.5 hours every day. So for all those people out there who say, I don't have time to meditate, if you're really busy, then meditation will actually give you extra time every day, and extra quality time. I noticed that after meditating, I was actually much more effective and using those hours of mind much more effectively. So for all the busy people out there, meditation is the key. It's like an investment. Put in some money and you get much more money.
Kashi, we would like to leave the listeners with a special tool that will increase happiness in their lives. Is there any suggestions that you have?
I would say, just keep the attention on the breath. Whenever we find that there's too much happening in life, just sit in a corner, just keep the attention on the breath, close the eyes, just go inward. There is a saying in Sanskrit, it says, in Hindi it says, Antarmukhi Sada Sukhi. The one who looks inwards will ever be happy. So the source of happiness is not outside, but it's inside. Looking inward is the key to happiness.
Thank you so much for spending this hour with us and sharing your wisdom. And our beloved listeners, we very much appreciate it.
Thank you for being with us for this hour. Please join us each Sunday night on BBS Radio Station 1 at 9 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. Shows can also be heard in the Archives section of the Media tab. Please remember that BFC is a volunteer group and we survive by donations only. So look deep within, and if you feel guided, we encourage you to go to prepareforchange.net website and donate an amount you can afford. That way, you can assist us to continue the work at prepareforchange.net global movement. We thank you for your generosity and your much-needed show of love and kindness. Remember, we are all voices of the world.
From every culture. See?